I'm sorry, next question.
Please explain the danger of going to Society of St. Peter.
Okay, so very quickly, Fraternity of St. Peter. Okay, what this is, Fraternity of St. Peter was established by John Paul II after 1988 when Archbishop Lefebvre consecrated four bishops. It was an alternative to try to keep people from going to Society of St. Pius X and becoming a traditional Latin mass. By establishing what they call the Latin Mass. Problem, okay? We talked about the Novus Ordo, came out, promulgated in 1969. 1968, Paul VI, before he changed the Mass, he changed the consecration form for bishops. He made the form ambiguous. And as Pope Leo XIII, in his Apostolic Constitution, Apostolici Curiae, when he declared the Anglican orders, you know, from the Church of Henry VIII, Anglican orders were invalid on those very same principles and also the other principles, sacramental theology. These modern bishops are not bishops. So if they're not bishops, they can't make priests. So you have a man up there who's vested in saying a Latin Mass, and he may have been ordained in a Latin rite, but the bishop who ordained him was consecrated in an invalid rite. That's the problem. And you know, when I think of what happened in the 60s, I have to tell you this, the book that where I was talking about Belladad and the devil and the Belladad, this Tanti fella right here, who left and became a communist, you know who he was good friends with? Montini, Paul VI. And in the book it talks about how under Pope Pius XI and Pope Pius XII, Rome was training these priests to go behind the Iron Curtain to the Eastern Bloc countries to keep the faith alive. To the great astonishment, Pope Pius XII was informed that those men, those priests, were captured, arrested, and some of them killed. Somebody had inside information exactly who they were and what was going on. So if you got to connect the dots, but you know, you got this tiny guy who's a communist, and then Montini's his good friend. And you know, you can see, you can see something's not right there. So Fraternity of St. Peter, they're not valid masses there because those priests are not truly ordained. Now, I'd have to say this, if you were like in danger of death, you're dying and needed absolution, you could go to anyone who's validly ordained. It could be Orthodox priest, give you absolution if he could do it the right way, the right form. It could be an older priest can give you absolution. In danger of death, the church supplies for those, the jurisdiction and the faculties for that, but he has to be validly ordained. Are there older priests out there? Yes, there are older priests out there, and it would be good to know who they are and where they're going to be approached in danger of death. But I would not go to Fraternity of St. Peter. I wouldn't go to a Novus Ordo priest. They're not priests. And what do? If you can't get to a priest, you make a perfect act of contrition with the desire of wanting to go to confession. And if you live, you'll make that confession to a validly ordained priest. Any other questions? Yes. Okay, so the thing is this, the key to infallibility is the Pope. So the Pope is infallible when he speaks ex cathedra. That means from the chair. So what are the conditions? He speaks as the head of the church to the universal church on matters of faith and morals, and he's binding the church. So interestingly, the totality of bishops are infallible, but only when they're teaching in union with the Pope in a council, ecumenical council, or what we would call the universal ordinary universal magisterium. What the bishops of the world teach in union with the Pope, that's infallible. Okay, that's the reason why the Masons knew we have to attack the papacy. And then, you know, like Jesus said, strike the shepherd and scatter the sheep. That's exactly what's happened. That's the reason why there's a difference of opinion about, well, how is the situation of the church going to be remedied? A lot of different opinions about that. I have my opinion. I'm sure there's other have other different opinions. But at least for me, and for right now, we have valid orders. We We have the Catholic faith, and I believe the traditional clergy are carrying on the mission of the church, and that jurisdiction is being supplied to the bishops and to the priest. Now, we've talked about this so many times in the past, but there was a three-year time where there's no pope. It became Pope Clement and Pope Gregory X. 3 years, and there were 21 bishops consecrated without papal mandate. There was no pope. These dioceses became vacant, and neighboring bishops came and consecrated bishops. Those bishops functioned in those dioceses. They did not have a mandate from the pope because there's no pope. And there was no problem with that. I read of another example of during the one of the heresies, I don't know if it was Nestorianism, Saint Eusebius, a bishop, when he found places where there was no Catholic bishops, he would ordain deacons, priests, and bishops to keep the mission of the church going, because that's the supreme law of the church. And so the concept of supplied jurisdiction, that's not something made up, that's right in canon law. And I have no doubt in my mind that our priests and bishops, traditional priests and bishops, they need to do all those things that fulfill that mission, the salvation of souls. Because, you know, the mission has to continue and always will continue to the end of time. How the situation in the church is going to be resolved, it doesn't seem very, you know, hopeful right now, but, you know, I've seen more interesting things happen that you never thought would happen and do happen. So God's in charge, and God's going to guide us and lead us. But for at least right now, I believe that we don't have anything to worry about other than to try to persevere and try to argue about this, and that just not going to get us anywhere. Yes?
Under the principle of epikeia, couldn't you consecrate additional bishops? And if you're out fishing and slip into a hole and drown, what do we do? Wouldn't it be useful to have a couple backups?
And I'll tell you why. A family come in from California, won't mention any names. So we're going to go bow fishing. So his boys are going on this canoe and that canoe, and I'm going to take the fella and his younger son. And I could tell, as soon as he got in the boat, this guy does not have balance. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. So I say, you know, you might want to sit down right now. It's like, but we are really nailing the fish with a bow and arrow. If you ever bow fished, it's a really great thing. We get across the lake, and I'm right about to shoot this big fish, and all of a sudden I feel the boat go, woof. He just flipped the boat. So, I mean, I go underwater, I come back up. Fortunately, I grabbed onto a log, and I grabbed onto the boat. Now, boats have flotation in the bottom of the where the seats are, so it never sinks completely. But it might sink about, maybe 6 inches down below the... If it gets sinks 6 inches below the sea, the level of the water, you lose it. You won't be able to see it. So I'm hanging on to the boat, and I said, hey, we got to get this boat right. So we flip it up, and we push it up onto the log, and I straddle the log. I tell a son, hey, you get on a log too. And I say, hey, you got to take your life jacket off and go down there and start. Got to get a bucket. We lost all of our fish in the buckets, but here's us bailing out. We got everything righted. But I was thinking, what you said could have happened. If I didn't have a life jacket on, because they're just cumbersome, I've hit that log, been knocked out, I'd have been down there. So I do wear a life jacket. Sometimes. But I just want to say this too. You know, that's not the first time. We had a priest meeting one time, and this young priest says, when are you going to consecrate a bishop? I said, you know, I was going to consecrate you, but now that you asked a question, I have to change it. Another thing too. I like to have a sense of humor. So, you know, I don't know if you saw in the Pontifical Mass, I have these buskins, these Episcopal shoes. Twice the priest bought me shoes that didn't fit. They wouldn't have even fit Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. They were so small. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I can't even walk in these things. These are so tight. So I finally just ordered my own shoes from Rome and got the shoes, whatever. But at the priest meeting, what I was going to do is pass the shoes around and say, if any of these any of you fit these shoes, you get to be consecrated bishop. So they didn't fit anybody, and I knew they wouldn't. So I'm I was safe about that. But I want to say this, though. Yeah, so we have bishops that we work with. And the important thing is this. There has to be a need. Because oftentimes, I mean, it's been the history, and I'm not mentioning any names or this, that, but there's been constantly splits. Where a bishop gets consecrated, no sooner he gets consecrated, and they split. They got two different groups, and it's whatever. So we're working with other bishops. We have good rapport with them, and I'm not worried about it. So it's in God's hands, and I'm going to be careful when I go fishing, too. So, any other questions? Yes?
Has there been any systems created, or is there a system that is being worked on, or kept in law and ecclesiastical courts? How is that handled by the tradition? Canon law and ecclesiastical courts, is there any system that has been created, or how are these things handled? Is there a discussion about how to handle disputes and issues that come up in canon law?
Well, it's like this. So obviously there's difference of opinion, and I think each bishop with his group of priests works on those issues to work on them together. So for the CMRI, we have both religious priests, the CMRI priests, and we have secular priests. And we not only that, but we have Carmelite priests, we have Franciscan priests. There's a lot of different groups that we're working, you know, in conjunction. How many know Father Zepeda? Father Zepeda is going to be starting a Carmelite convent in Colorado very soon. And we're going to be, I'll be sponsoring the sister coming from Mexico. I'll be sponsoring him through Omaha. And we wish them well. Down in Mexico, we got the Carmelite priests and sisters, the Sisters of Divine Providence down there. In Omaha, we have the Sisters of the Mother of God. There are 42 sisters there, and we have schools around the country. We're working a lot of different groups of people, and we're trying to help everybody out. I want everybody to, it's like this. We work together because it's for the salvation of souls, and we're going to do our best. And I rely on four consultors. You know, I'm superior general, but I'm also the bishop of CMRI, but I will not necessarily be always the superior general. The priest will elect a superior general, and he'll be charged with CMRI. I'll be the bishop of CMRI, but I'm not necessarily have to be the superior general. So, but I have my hands full with the secular priests that we have. We have close to 50 priests. Many of them are secular. We have multiple different convents and religious that we're working with. We try to help everybody out. And so we try to work together. And that's a challenge in itself, you know, when there's difference of opinion, try to work through those differences of opinion, just try to keep everybody united. And, you know, back in my mind, I say, Lord, I'm going to do the best that I can. I can only do so much. You have to take care of everything else. Yes? Say again?
Are Vatican II Catholics, are they saved?
Are they saved? Well, this is like this. As I said, in order to be considered a Catholic, you have to be baptized and profess a Catholic faith. So I'll give you some examples, like this young man with cerebral palsy that I said. He wants to be Catholic. He loves Our Lady, prays the rosary, prays the guardian angel. Where's this kid? He gave him a scapular. I mean, this kid does not have a clue about anything going on in the church. But as long as he professes the Catholic faith, he can be saved, of course. And you know, if he were dying, I would not hesitate to give him the last rites. But see, in order to be considered a heretic, you have to pertinaciously, that means obstinately deny the faith. Now, are there people in the Novus Ordo that do that? Yeah. And I would consider them heretics. But I wouldn't, like a sweeping, they're all heretics, they're all pertinacious. I wouldn't say that either, okay? But yeah, I mean, some of them definitely are, I mean, especially you stop and think in this day and age, with the liberalism and all the other things, there's a lot of them that have been brainwashed or misled, and they deny the faith. I'll give you an example. So I was listening, when I drive, I try to pray three rosaries, and I drive a lot, and turned on the radio, and I was listening, and there was this, I think it was a spirit radio, Novus Ordo, whatever, and they were saying, we got a lot of work to do because only 33% of Catholics today believe in the Eucharist, the real presence. We got a lot of work to do. I said, well, you know why it's that case? Communion in the hand, and lay people distributing communion, and the Novus Ordo, where they emit all those genuflections, and it's not a sacrifice anymore, it's just a meal. That's why they don't believe. So Anyone, if anyone publicly denies, I don't believe that's the Eucharist, they're a heretic. Yes.
Well, I'm a Vatican II.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm me a new too. Believer.
Okay.
47.
Okay.
Well, and this is new information, and you said you had more. I'd be interested in hearing that.
If we got a photocopy machine out there, we're going to start you off right off the bat. Okay. So, I do want to say this. You know, it's kind of like this. I was very fortunate. My parents, when the changes were happening in the church, says this is not right. I mean, this was like really, really blatant. I'd like to show you a picture, though. And, you know, I hate to show you old pictures of stuff, but this is a old picture that everybody probably in this room has seen about 100 times. This is Paul VI, Montini, friends with that Tondi guy who became a communist. Here are the Protestants, the group picture of the Protestants who were present for that commission to change the Mass. It wasn't just a change from Latin to English, a radical change in the very nature of the Mass. So in the bookstore in the back, they have a book by Cardinal Ottaviani called The Ottaviani Intervention. Cardinal Ottaviani, he wrote a public criticism of the Novus Ordo and says it's a striking departure from the Catholic Mass as defined by the Council of Trent. So this would be like a warning sign when you have a man that's supposedly the Pope and talking about Protestants. One other thing. Back in 69, the words of consecration over the chalice were changed. And this is another part I could have gone in, but we're getting way over time here. But the man who was the authority to change the words of Christ was a Protestant professor, Joachim Jeremias. And he lied about the problems with the words of consecration. And the long and short of it is this. He said that it's not clear from the Hebrew language, the word for all and for many, but that was a lie. The word kola in Aramaic means all, and sagion means many. Christ used this. Now I'm gonna try to make it real simple but short. Jesus died on the cross. His death was sufficient to save all mankind. When we receive the sacraments, the graces we receive from the sacraments are from what Christ merited on the cross, by his death on the cross. That's the reason why the sign of the cross is incorporated when you baptize or pour the water, sign of the cross. When you give Holy Communion, sign of the cross. Absolution, sign of the cross. Confirmation, sign of the cross. In the Mass, it's the fruit of Christ's passion that's applied to the elect, to those who belong to the church and are receiving the graces from the Mass. Not all men cooperate with God's grace. Not all men are receiving the fruit. So that's the reason why Jesus' death on the cross was sufficient to save all. But at the Last Supper, when Jesus changed the bread and wine to his body and blood, he said, "This is the chalice of my blood, which shall be shed for many unto the remission of sins." And all the Catholic rites of the church, they all use the word many. There is even an Eastern rite that uses the original Aramaic, and they use many, not kola. Very subtle, but the Council of Catechism of the Council of Trent, after the Council of Trent, there was a catechism issued. They explained all the different sacraments and the whole faith. And when it gets to the words of consecration, it says, with reason were the words for all not used in the consecration, because not all participate in the graces from the Mass unto the remission of sins. So stop and think of this. For like nearly 2,000 years, the words of Christ are being used. Paul VI, on the authority of a Protestant professor, Joachim Jeremias didn't even believe in the divinity of Christ, changed the words of Christ. You have these Lutherans come to be on the commission. And those Lutherans said, we can use the Mass that the Catholics have now because it's not a sacrifice. One of our priests, Father Dominic Radecki, before he got Queen of Angels, he was looking for a church. There's a Lutheran church came up for sale, and he was talking to this Lutheran minister. Lutheran minister said, "Hey, you and I use the same Mass." He said, "No, I don't." He said, "I offer Latin Mass." He said, "Oh, okay." But he's talking about the new Mass. The Lutherans use the new Mass because it's not a sacrifice. So I just want to tell you this. Long and short of it is, we are Roman Catholics. Radical changes happen within the Catholic Church, breaking with what the Catholic Church taught in the past. And as we mentioned before, and I'll photocopy some of these things, like the Church has been infiltrated. How do you explain, like I say, this man is supposed to be the Pope Francis, and him saying adulterers can go to communion? And these people try to make an excuse, like maybe he doesn't know better. Oh, he doesn't know the sixth and ninth commandment. I get it, yeah, he don't know. Poor guy, I wish he would have studied his catechism better, you know? You can't make excuses for that. So, hey, we know, yes, sir.
Regarding mission support, if you wanted to give to somewhere like the German missions or Father Christoph, how would you recommend sending them?
Well, this is the thing. Well, Father Christoph is here. You know, because of the war and with Ukraine and Russia and stuff like that, I think things are cut, right? We can't send things. Father Christoph here? No. But, okay, right there. We can't send it, right? Okay, so if he's going to get any support, he has to get it now before he goes back. But, you know, Tim Draymond, you're pretty good at that money thing. Listen, I'm going to tease, can I tease him for a second? He's really good at the money when he's not at the casino. Go ahead. Just teasing Tim. So, okay, so he can transfer money. You can? Okay, so when he's like in the Philippines or somewhere else, we can do it there, right? But not straight to Russia, okay?
How about Bitcoin?
Are there any other questions? Because we're a little bit afternoon and I got Father haunting me. Hey, you know, we're talking about going back. We're going to go back like over 50 years with the priest. I first met Father when he was in second grade here. So we go way back. Any other questions? Otherwise, we'll say the Angelus and give you a blessing, okay? We stand for the Angelus.